When President Trump recently signed that executive order to dismantle President Obama's Clean Power Plan, which would have reduced carbon emissions from fossil fuel-powered plants, Trump said he was delivering on his campaign promise to restore coal mining jobs by eliminating regulations. Other moves, Trump says, will help promote a stronger American economy include removing some rules governing methane emissions from oil and gas wells and opening the door to the possibility of rolling back car fuel efficiency standards. Well, much of it must feel like a sledgehammer to our next guest, former Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz, who's also a nuclear physicist. He recently returned to teach at MIT. Secretary Moniz, what words would you use to describe the president's actions?
Clearly, watching what's happening in Washington raises a lot of concerns. Certainly, the president's actions on climate change are a big step back. What I mean is that clearly it will make it very difficult, more difficult, certainly to meet our Paris goals, for example, for emissions. Although I do want to say, without being Pollyannish, that the die is cast. We're not going back after Paris. The world is heading to low carbon.
Well, hold on a second. The Paris Agreement, cutting coal emissions, was part of the pledge to lower emissions by 26% below 2005 levels by 2025. But the thinking now is, how can you possibly make that? You say the die is cast, but how can that goal possibly be met if the Clean Power Plan with concerning power plant emissions is rolled back as it has been?
No, the die is cast in terms of heading to a low carbon future. Meeting the quantitative goals in 2020 or 2025, that will certainly be made more difficult here. However, speaking of coal, let's talk about that. I still expect no new coal plants to be built. The reality is the decrease in coal use, the loss of coal jobs, has been primarily driven by low-cost natural gas.
It's not just that. We've had coal miners on with recent reports that black lung is back among, you know, sometimes retired coal miners. The jobs aren't there because they've been mechanized. The New York Times had an incredible story about these truck haulers that are self-driving. There's not even somebody on a remote driving them around these coal mines.
Right. An interesting fact is that the number of tons of coal produced per worker in Wyoming, let's say, is nearly 10 times that of West Virginia, because in Wyoming, they have this highly mechanized surface mining. In fact, an irony of the president's actions is that he also eliminated the moratorium on coal leases on federal lands. If that is exercised, that will further tip the balance towards Western coal, which has very, very few jobs associated with it, from Eastern coal. Long term, I honestly just don't see that this is going to have an enormous impact, because carbon dioxide emissions accumulate. If we emit more now, we'll have to cut our budget of emissions even more in the future. So all this is doing is making it harder and more expensive in the long term. And the number of jobs lost in, let's say, coal is measured in the couple of tens of thousands. The number of jobs created in the solar industry is about 280,000. The problem is they're not in the same place.
Right.
And so the macro economy may actually be better off, but we have local stresses. And so I believe, frankly, that we've not done a good enough job, I think, in working bottom up to look at what workers need, what communities need to be helped through a period of transition.
We've talked to a lot of economists who say this is one of the first times in American history where people haven't gotten up and moved to where the jobs are. So, for instance, the coal miners maybe in Virginia are not going to wherever the solar would be, maybe Southern California. That's just not happening.
Part of the stress, of course, is the rapid increase in the use of information technology, which in some sense could be used to permit people to not move and yet have work. However, that presumes a high degree of education and the ability to get these transferable skills. And I think that's where, again, we have not probably done enough. And I might add, we will need policy as well to go along with innovation that reduces the cost of new technologies. In my view, a major problem with what the young administration has done, it's not only what came out with the executive order, but it's also what came out as a draft budget from the Office of Management and Budget.
Let me ask you about that, and also ask you about the overall disdain in this administration for the global agreement that climate change is largely man-made. Here is the president's director of the Office of Management and Budget, Mick Mulvaney, speaking a couple weeks ago about what monies were going to be spent on climate change.
I think the president was fairly straightforward. We're not spending money on that anymore. We consider that to be a waste of your money to go out and do that. So that is a specific tie to his campaign.
Ernest Moniz, what did you think when you heard that?
Well, I think that is, first of all, just plain economically short-sighted. The global trend to low carbon has been estimated, for example, by the International Energy Agency, to lead to about a $60 trillion investment globally in green energy technologies over the next couple of decades. That is an enormous market. We should be doubling down on our innovation budget so that we, in fact, capture the gains from that. That's where we will create more jobs. The budget, as was put out, claiming we're not going to throw good money after bad.
Meaning climate change
is completely misguided. What it's doing is hurting our competitive edge. And in fact, it's going to set up some precedent in the future to repeat what has been said recently. Why is China taking all these jobs from us? Well, how about because we are giving up our edge in innovation? China is fully prepared to take whatever leadership role it can in climate, both in terms of the global discussion, but I would say even more pointedly in terms of developing the technology base to, in fact, capture market share.
Let's talk about Rick Perry. During the primary debate, he famously said he wanted to abolish the Energy Department, which you once led. He forgot what it was called. But you surprised us, Ernest Moniz, by saying on Fareed Zakaria's program that you were kind of impressed by him in some ways. Tell us more.
Well, the statement he made came from, bluntly, he's not the only one who did not have a full understanding of what the Department of Energy does. I will give him credit that in his confirmation hearing, he did not wait for a question. He just addressed the issue head on and said, look, now that I've been nominated as Energy Secretary, I've looked at it. I now understand the full range of what this department does to contribute to American needs, and I was wrong. And certainly in his words, he has, right from the beginning, upon confirmation, emphasized the importance of national laboratories, of R&D, of innovation.
Well, what have you heard since then?
Well, I know that on his first day on the job, he held a town hall meeting, and I know he certainly said the right things about again, the innovation agenda, the R&D agenda, the nuclear security agenda. Unfortunately, however, especially on the energy innovation front, he made some very positive statements after becoming secretary about the importance. And then I don't know how else to say it other than being undercut by the OMB budget, which in fact zeroed out a program that was, in some sense, the face of innovation. ARPA-E, Advanced Research Projects Agency Energy, first 200 projects that were completed by ARPA-E led to 36 companies being formed. It led to well over $1 billion of private capital coming in. It's all the measures that you would think Democrats and Republicans alike would applaud.
And Rick Perry tweeted about it.
He said it's exactly the kind of innovators we need to support. And then the Mulvaney announcement on the budget said, with very little detail, it went out of its way to point out this program would be zeroed out. I do not understand the logic.
This is a sledgehammer.
There's no doubt. It's certainly been a blunt instrument applied up to now. And I will say that from everything I know, there certainly are serious morale problems. Another issue true in just about every agency is that below the leader, there's nobody home in terms of the senior political appointees who go through the Senate confirmation process.
Because they're not in yet. And these aren't held up. They're just not appointed.
They're not only not in, they haven't been nominated.
Yeah.
But I have great expectation and hope that in terms of the budget, for example, the Congress will put forward a budget that is much more balanced. I believe flat out the budget as proposed is dead on arrival.
That's former Secretary of the Energy Department Ernest Moniz. who's now back at MIT, a nuclear physicist. While you have an administration, Scott Pruitt, for instance, head of the EPA, filed lawsuits against the EPA 16 times when he was Oklahoma's attorney general, you have a disdain for science across the board. How do we heal this divide?
What has to be described as an assault on science in many, many, many dimensions, climate denial among them, is part of a bigger pattern of what is now often called alternative facts. And I consider this to be one of the most serious developments that we have seen over the last 10 weeks. What could be more essential for the functioning of a democracy than fact-based discussions, which can lead to very, very different views in terms of how to address the facts? But if we can't even have the facts straight, sometimes I have to say it would appear intentionally, it goes, I think, to the very, very core of our democracy. And I think we have a lot of introspection and dialogue and action that we need to take in civil society to restore fact-based discussions.
Former Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz, thanks so much.
Thank you.